Welcome to the Travel Small Towns Podcast, the only podcast dedicated to travel, culture, and lifestyle from a small town perspective, bringing you destination stories, experiences, and tips from well-seasoned travelers, destination experts, influencers, and more, and me, your host, Christy Burns. All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the My Town Travels podcast. Today, I'm super excited to have with me Betsy Ramsey, who has become a friend that I have been doing several projects with, and I'm super excited to have her today. She is the genius blogger behind Natty Gal. So we're going to talk to Natty Gal today and find out what she is all about. So thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, well, first, Christy, thank you so much for having me on today. You know, I initially came across your content on Instagram, and I just love the fact that you focus on small towns as your niche, because I think they so often get overlooked when people are planning their travels. But for people who do take the time to add in a small town or two to their itinerary, you can add just, you know, so much to your experience. So I'm excited to speak with you today.
Well, thank you. I mean, yes, we think that obviously small towns are very special. And, you know, and especially here in the U.S., I mean, they're the backbone of this country and a lot of our history. And so, yeah, we're very excited to continue to put that content out for people to read and to experience small towns. And, you know, they're starting to get more and more robust as far as what they can offer and, you know, show people what's theirs. And that's another reason how you and I hooked up, was because you love to travel to small towns, and it's part of something that you do through Natty Gal. So tell me a little bit about Natty Gal and how did you start this, and just kind of a little bit about you and your story.
Sure. So before COVID, my day job was working as a planning analyst for a very small healthcare consulting company. And it was actually an amazing gig because I loved the people I worked with. It was just the owner and her daughter, and I had the flexibility to be able to travel when I wanted. Everything about it was great, but the work is pretty dry. It's data analysis. So I was working with a lot of Excel spreadsheets and PowerPoints and whatnot. And it must have been about 2014 or so, I came across a company, a startup called Keaton Rowe, that offered online virtual styling services. And I applied to them and worked as a stylist for them as a side gig for a few years until, unfortunately, they lost their funding and they had to close their business. And then that took me, you know, several months after I lost that, I found that I was really missing that creative outlet that Keaton Rowe had provided. So I just decided to start Natty Gal and just talk about some of the things that interest me, which, you know, are fashion styling, travel, and some lifestyle tips. And that really helped scratch that creative itch I'd been experiencing. So I've just been enjoying and maintaining that ever since.
I love it. So on your website, it says less stuff, more substance, which I think we all definitely need. And then kind of your tagline, it says mindful fashion, creating a fulfilling lifestyle, high-low travel experiences. So I wanted to break this down a little bit. Tell me what is mindful fashion?
Sure. Yeah, I have a couple of self-coined terms in there, and mindful fashion is one of them. So mindful fashion is kind of the phrase that I use to describe my personal approach to fashion and wardrobe building. And it's basically a modified capsule wardrobe approach. For those of your listeners that aren't familiar with capsule wardrobes, it's essentially a smaller, well-thought-out wardrobe of pieces that mix and match well together. So you end up with fewer pieces, but more things to wear because everything works together. And yeah, it's really, once you get into it, it's a lot of fun. And there are a lot of capsule enthusiasts out there that say, oh, you know, you can only have this number of items in your wardrobe, or you absolutely have to have this white shirt and these black pants because they're indispensable. And my approach differs from that, in that I don't really believe in assigning a set number of items that people can own. And I also don't believe that we all need to have the exact same so-called pieces, you know, indispensable pieces in our closets, because our lifestyles are all different. So what I do believe in is creating a wardrobe that suits your lifestyle. Before I got into this, this was something that I really, really struggled with, because I used to love buying like fancy party dresses. I was just addicted to party dresses. And you know, like special occasion wear, and then also business wear, like suits and pretty severe dresses and, you know, that very button down businessy kind of look. But in reality, I didn't have very many occasions to wear those items. My lifestyle just wasn't like that. So my wardrobe wasn't really aligned with my much more casual lifestyle. And my mindful fashion philosophy is definitely about that, about creating a wardrobe that suits your lifestyle, and then also just looking for color palettes and proportions that all work together so that you end up with more wearable outfits in your closet despite having fewer overall pieces. And it's really a great approach when you get used to it, and that it saves you money, it's good for the environment, and it's wonderful for travel because you already have a nice base of mix and match clothing for your suitcase when you go somewhere.
I feel like that is something that I need help with. Like I do, I feel like I do this seasonally where, you know, between having children and all these other things where your weight goes up and down and you have things that fit and things that don't and things that you just can't get rid of, but you're hoping that you're going to get back into them someday. And kind of what I end up doing is especially travel items, like things that I know I need to be comfortable when I'm traveling and working, and I need to have something I'm confident in. And
100%.
I mean, that's a very small pile for me right now. So, you know, coming off of having a new kiddo, well, I guess it's not that long. It's been 2 years, but I'm still not back into the things I'd like to be into. And especially in summertime, you know, things that I'm comfortable in, that I'm cool in, it's a very small pile that I keep going through over and over and over again. And I have like this whole giant wardrobe behind me of just stuff, you know, that I hope I'm going to be able to get back into, or that I'm, you know, I don't know. It's a mess. It's just a mess. And so how do people, when they come to you and they say, man, that sounds amazing, where do you start?
Well, for you, I would say, see, you're already started. You don't know that you're started, but you've got that pile of items that you love and that you're comfortable in and fit you well. So I would say just start methodically ditching some of those pieces that you're not wearing that are sitting there in the background, and look for common factors between what you are comfortable in. If those are all, you know, like a wide leg profile, or maybe you wear a lot of skirts, or maybe, you know, shorts or whatever, or a certain kind of tee, just look for the fabrication, look for the cut, and continue adding to that small pile of things that you absolutely love in colors that coordinate.
Yeah, no, that's very smart. I mean, and I think that we, you know, I mean, we live in such a materialistic world, and it's so easy to go and just pick something up, you know, if something doesn't fit or something like that. And I'd rather have something that's going to last and that I can wear a lot, as opposed to something that's, you know, not that great of quality. And, you know, I know I'm kind of getting off track a little bit, but I think that's really good advice for like those common factors of what you like, because even in the pile I just explained to you, there's a lot, you know, they're not pieces of clothing. They're not all pieces of clothing that are my best pieces of clothing.
I mean, right. Yes.
Frankly, a little worried that some of them are going to rip at this point because you know, it's like you're wearing them so much. But yeah, I think that the common factors, that's really good advice on how to start. And so talking about mindful fashion, going from there about creating lifestyle for that, did we kind of hit on that already?
You know, a little bit. I think that's probably the uniting force behind my other tiers of fashion and travel. And it's just that, you know, I think as women, I'm in my mid-50s now. I don't have children, but I have a lot of friends that are going through the empty nest thing. Okay. And they're just kind of wondering, like, they don't have enough meaning in their life. So I like to encourage people to find that meaning by really, you know, looking inside themselves and analyzing, like, what brings you your happiness? And for me, you know, that's travel. And then also simplifying the rest of their lives. That's where the wardrobe comes in. Just simplify, you know, your closet, simplify the amount of stuff you have in your home. You don't have to go full on minimalism. But I think when you sort of get rid of a lot of the clutter and, give yourself the time to focus on those experiences that really make you feel fulfilled and happy, it can be life-changing. You know, like I said, for me, it's travel. For some people, it's volunteer work. Other people get very into like an artistic pursuit, you know, maybe painting or knitting. Everybody's got their own thing, and it's individual to each of us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and you know, you touched on something that I think a lot of women, so I know you said you're in your 50s, I'm in my 40s, and getting rid of those pieces, like I would be able to breathe a little bit easier if I could just clean out my entire closet and get rid of stuff, get rid of some of the clutter. It's amazing what getting rid of clutter does. I mean,
definitely.
I'm an organized person. And so, I mean, I'm not like type A organized, I wouldn't say, you know, my husband's
right, that's
type
good.
A,
yeah.
So I know the difference, but I, you know, I like to have things in order. And when things get just, you know, a little bit too messy, I really can't focus on my work or anything else as well. You know, it's something that I really do need to take time to do. But I didn't know if you had any advice on how do you get rid of things that you know you're probably never going to wear them again, but you just can't get rid of them. I mean, I have totes upon totes of like of things. Like for me, this is how I've gotten rid of stuff out of my closet, but I have not gotten rid of it. They're in my garage in totes, taking up space.
And yeah,
because like some clothing for me also has memory.
That's it. I was going to ask you if it was sentimental, like if some of the things were sentimental value. And, you know, one of the little tricks that I've learned for that, both with clothing and then just, you know, objects or, you know, things that maybe people gifted me years ago that meant so much to me, but they just don't suit my lifestyle anymore, is using that phone and taking a picture of it and tagging it, you know, make a little album of sentimental items. And that way you've still got it. You can remember it. You can, you know, enjoy the memory, but get it out of there. I'm going to give you some tough love. Just take the first step. Start with one item. That's all it takes. And, you know, let it steamroll.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good advice. Cause yeah, it is a lot of it, or it's tied to not just one specific memory, but I kind of like a different version of myself, you know, like, you know, something from when I was in my 20s, like I'm not going to wear anything that I wore in my 20s. I mean, if I am, maybe I shouldn't be, you know, so do I really need to hang on to it? Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know why. It's just really hard for me. I can get it out of my closet, but not get it out of my house is my issue.
Right. I think it's very, very relatable. Believe me, I think there are so many people that struggle with it. And I used to too. You know, I've been doing this. I've had a lot more practice than you have. I've been doing this for quite a long time now. And I can understand where it's so difficult to do it, but try and recall, like you said, that feeling that when you do clear out, it sort of clears mental space and it clears, you know, your emotions to embrace a bunch of great new things and a different mm-hmm. version of yourself.
You know, and I would be the person that would start like an album of memories based on clothing. I just might be that person. Maybe there's, I might sound weird to some people, but you know, there may be those listeners out there that are like, no, I get that. You know, I don't know.
Well, it's not an album you have to put on display. You know, that could be
true.
A private album that you just peruse through when you need to. But yeah, I'm definitely that person. And yeah, nobody sees that album except me, but I know that the memories are there.
Well, I just think it's fascinating, you know, how you help people in this way. So basically, just kind of recap a little bit, you know, focus highly on capsule wardrobes and getting people to think about fewer pieces that fit into, you know, everyday life that work together. And, you know, in order to start that process, kind of looking at common factors of the things you like to wear. So like you said, certain types of cut or the way that the pants fit, you know, whatever those are. I know you had better terms than the way I'm describing it, but basically looking for those common factors is a good place to start. And you gave some good tips on how to get rid of the things, maybe start your own little picture album so you can get this stuff out of your closet. Is that about right?
Exactly. Exactly. You nailed it.
So one more thing, just based on your tagline, what to you is high-low travel experiences? I'm very interested in this.
Sure. Yeah, that's another one of my very famous self-coined terms. And what I mean by high-low travel is essentially combining luxury level lodging or transportation with lower cost activities once you've actually arrived at your destination. And as I said, my husband and I are both in our mid 50s now. So the idea of, you know, like really budget hostels or, you know, budget accommodations and even, you know, back in the bus economy flights just aren't going to do it for us anymore. We like our creature comforts, but we also find that we connect a lot more easily with local people by eating where they eat and enjoying the kind of activities that they do around town. So, you know, we try and embrace that. And those things are usually a little more budget oriented activities, I guess is the word that I'm looking for. So that being said, you know, we don't always stay in luxury accommodations and we don't always eat at budget restaurants. But, you know, I have some examples. There are like Michelin starred restaurants that are all around the world that can be a complete bargain compared to equivalent restaurants in the US. When we were in Thailand, we booked a meal in Bangkok at a restaurant called Nam, which often cited as one of the 50 best restaurants in the world. But when we got there, the prices were actually similar to what we'd pay for a nice, but, you know, a fairly ordinary dinner here at home. So that to me is just a very good use of your time and money to experience Michelin level service at a price that's comparable to what you would pay for something just on a typical weekend at home. And I love helping people figure out what splurges are worth it and where it can be smart to save. So, you know, it's all just about maximizing that travel experience in terms of both time and budget.
Absolutely. Well, and I love, love, love that approach because you make complete sense with throwing in aging. And just going, you know, there are just things that 10 years ago I might have done that I'm not going to do now. Like, I'm just not. I'm not going to sleep in a certain way. Or, you know, I mean, if I can afford the extra, you know, $20 on the plane to upgrade my ticket, I mean, because I mean, there's things like that, too, that, you know, for example, I just flew Southwest last week. Mm-hmm. And I'm so sad. I'm so sad they're getting rid of their open seating.
Yes, so yeah. Everybody, I agree. That's coming, I think that's a sad change. Yeah.
It is a sad change because I feel like that's a big part of their culture. And, you know, but unfortunately, like the reason that they're changing it, I don't want to get off track too much here, but in case anybody's interested, the reason that they're getting rid of it is because they have too many people taking advantage of their hospitality.
Right.
They've got people that are they always do anybody with disabilities and then families and military, you know, all can board before the general boarding. And people have really started. I saw this on my flight last week, you know, where it's like they can't really question, like, if there's one person that like clearly needs more assistance, but then like their entire family boards and it's a family of like seven.
Right.
You know, I mean, you've just got people standing in line being like, really? Come on. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, some things that were really nice on Southwest, and I'm sure that they'll still do, you know, some of those things, but they're not going to do the open, you know, the open seating anymore. And I just, yeah, I think that that's, anyways, yeah, got kind of off track there.
We're fine.
So my point of telling all of this with Southwest is that the nice thing is you could spend literally $20 more and get a really nice seat with plenty of room, you know, because they have different tiers with Southwest. So you have like the really cheap anytime tickets and, you know, you sit anywhere and whenever you get on the plane and there's going to be a seat for you. And then you have, you know, a couple of other tiers, Business Select, you get on the plane right away. But then they have like a tier underneath Business Select that it's still a refundable ticket. You still have early check-in. So you're in that A-list, a little further down, not Business Select. Anyways, you know, but it's only like $20 more sometimes than a regular ticket.
And that's like a wonderful tip. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And they didn't always have that. It used to just be like the Business Select. There used to be three tiers. Now there's four. And because I mentioned, you know, we had our little surprise baby 2 years ago. I took a year off from flying. And so, you know, there were some good changes and that was one of them. And yeah, and it's like, you know, as you age, why in the world would I want, you know, to spend extra time fighting for a seat, worried about where I'm going to go, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because I like flying Southwest. I think they're a very, they go a lot of places. They're inexpensive for the most part. You know, but for that extra $20, it's like, you know, you can still get settled and all of that, you know, and again, I wouldn't have made that. I probably wouldn't have made that decision in my 20s. I may not have even made that decision in my 30s because like $20 meant more to me, to my, you know, day to day.
Right.
You know, but now it's like, okay, well, I'm not like throwing money away, but like that's worth it to me.
It's just, yeah, a little bit of extra comfort. Yeah, yeah, you want to be, you do, you start to, you know, travel takes a toll. And yeah, there are times when it can definitely need to spend a little bit. Or, you know, the other thing I encourage people to do is to look into points and mile programs, because sometimes you can get an upgrade that way, you know, but yeah, be creative. But, you know, as you get older, yeah, your comfort becomes a little bit more important than it was in your 20s and 30s.
So. Definitely. And I think you should prioritize it. You know, if you're spending money to travel, then, you know, think about those things, you know, and that's why I really like this concept of the high-low travel, because it's like, where can you put the money that's going to make the most sense for your creature comforts and that's going to give you the better time? And where do you not need to put your money where you can still have a good time? Like you said, if you like traveling small, going to small town locations, you know, you can do an awful lot with experience-based things and talking to people and walking around a downtown and things that aren't going to cost you anything. So,
exactly.
You know, there's a lot of ways to fill that space and still get your, you know, get your monies put where it needs to be so that you're happy with some of those extra things that sometimes can be horrible. Because if you have like a 5-hour flight and it's horrible, that's not a great way to start off your trip. So
exactly. You're already tired. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, didn't mean to get off on a little sidetrack there with Southwest, but that's just kind of what
was on. No, that was very timely. Yeah.
Travel Small Towns could not be bringing you our wonderful travel content without our generous sponsors. We invite you to take a quick break with us to hear from our small town supporters of the Travel Small Towns podcast.
Discover Tuscarawas County, where history and culture collide. From a communal society to a missionary settlement, explore America's homefront, marvel at the art and restoration of the steam engine, and enjoy life decorated with murals and friendly faces. In addition to being the gateway to Ohio's Amish country, Tuscarawas County offers a variety of breweries, wineries, and culinary delights. Conveniently located in Northeast Ohio along I-77, we're less than 2 hours from Cleveland, Columbus, or Pittsburgh. For more information and local events, visit our website at TravelTusk.com. That's TravelTUSC.com.
So tell me a little bit just kind of about your, you know, how'd you really start getting with kind of giving advice with Natty Gal? And, you know, you're on Facebook and Instagram and, you know, what really drove you to go, you know what, like, I don't want to do this just for myself. I really want to help other people. And, you know, I'm going to get online and start doing this with people, because, I mean, it takes a commitment really to do that, to get on there and, you know, be able to talk to people all the time about these sorts of things.
It does. It does. And yeah, I'm going to share a dirty little secret with everyone listening here today. Social media is most definitely not my favorite outlet for communicating with people. And Christy, I know that you're so aware of this, but you know, the algorithm changes have made growth just so much more difficult and time consuming than it used to be.
Yes.
But the bottom line for a lot of people who are out there creating content is that if you work with brands, you know, they want you to have a presence on social media. So you have to do it.
Yeah.
But my blog is truly the baby. That's my preferred form of communication. And how I got into it It sort of serves two purposes, because I think, you know, as I mentioned, I started the blog just as a creative outlet. And it kind of was, especially when it came to travel, a nice way for me to summarize some of our trips and just sort of live through the memories and you know, write down all the details. And it was a very personal thing just for myself and my husband. And then as I started publicizing myself more, I realized, well, you know, there's a lot of little tips and tricks you pick up along the way. And there are some, you know, key things about organizing your time when you're planning, particularly international travel, you know, and people are interested in hearing those tips. And they're also interested in hearing about hidden finds and things like that. So that was kind of how I got into being an advisor.
That's awesome. Well, and you and I have that in common. I liked how you said the blog is the baby. You know, because it's interesting when the Facebook, Instagram game in the small town community, you know, started to become much more of an influence. And, you know, and the word influencer started to become a thing. You know, that was something that was hard for people like us, I think, because I have no interest to be an influencer. You know, mm-hmm. It turns out that by definition, I am one, but that's not my goal. That's not what I wanted to do. And the blog is the baby. Like you said, the website, getting people to get the information there, and that still stands true. And that's the thing that most people make money with, coaching and stuff nowadays. Like, that's the dirty little secret that they tell. You know, you're absolutely right, is that the website, having a website, having an outlet, you know, that you are driving people to and being able to communicate, you know, with your website and email, that is still the most effective way to communicate and to get information out there. You know, it's like if somebody sees something on social media, like they still need to be able to click on your website.
And yeah, you can only go into so much depth on a social media post.
Yeah.
You just can't go into the depth that you can on a web or on a blog post.
Right. And, you know, and a lot of there's just so much content out there, you know, nowadays. Like, you really just got to have a good place where content can live. And, you know, so really having a good website that you're focusing your time on is just so, so, so important. And it's just amazing to me, like, how many people, I've said this so many times on this show, like, it's amazing to me how many people are out there that are just want to do it, you know, with their social pages. And
right,
you know, and they might do okay with it, you know, but it's just like that content doesn't live forever. So at least for me, like with clients, it's like I can't go back and update, you know, that content. I can't do anything with any of that content, really, you know, long term without a website.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I you know, well, with just their social sites, but I just don't understand it. So, you know, it's one of those, like, I'm like, please, I love you, you're great at what you do, start a website. So you're right, that is the dirty little secret. Okay, so to kind of like switch gears just a little bit, you know, we've been talking about your mindful fashion and fulfilling lifestyle, and you know, these are all of these things we've kind of been tying into travel and small town travel, which obviously the show is about. Obviously, I have to ask you about small towns in your travel, and specifically, what kind of small towns do you love? Do you have any in particular that you would tell our listeners, like, I've been here and you absolutely have to see it?
Yeah. So just to start off as like a broad statement, I think that, you know, what draws me to smaller towns is that when you combine larger urban centers with smaller towns in your travels, you get so much more thorough of an overview of a country or a state in the U.S. than just visiting one of those areas. I always like to kind of imagine myself, like, if I were a foreigner visiting the U.S. for the first time, what would my perception be if I only visited like Miami or Los Angeles? Or, you know, what would my perception be if I only visited the Finger Lakes or Chagrin Falls, Ohio, or something? And, you know, all of those places give a very isolated snapshot of what that state or region is all about. And I think the more geography you incorporate and the more personal connections you make, the more balanced your understanding of a place becomes. So we try and plan our itineraries so that we can take advantage of both bigger cities, which tend to hold like some of the more famous sites, you know, across the world, and then also smaller towns that have so much more charm and usually a slower pace of life. I'm trying to think back to some stories of places that we've visited. One little anecdote that comes to mind is we were on a trip from Amsterdam to Munich, Germany. And we were driving on that trip, and we stopped for a couple of nights at a little guest house called Pension Letty, which is in the town of Baccarat, which is on the Rhine River. And of course, being the wanting to do all the things people that we are, we had both gotten colds during the course of our travels. So when we checked in, Letty, the owner of the little guest house, she took us to the pharmacy down the street, which of course was closed. But fortunately, she knew the pharmacist and called him up, and he came trotting over right across the street and opened the shop up for us so that we could buy some cold medicine, and we stocked up on tissues and whatnot. And we went to bed pretty early that night, just trying to nurse our colds and, you know, feel better for our next day of adventure. And then at breakfast the following morning, we realized that all the other people staying at the guest house were European background. There were no Americans there except us. And we wondered what they were all doing there. And it turns out that there was a festival in the next town down the river called Rheinenflammen. And this is a festival in the fall where they set off fireworks from the various castles along the Rhine. People go out in boats to view them, and the little town is just filled with like food and local wine stalls. And it's all really, really fun and festive. And it was a distinctly European feeling celebration. I don't think there were a whole lot of other Americans there, but we got to partake in that and had a wonderful, evening. And then on the ride home, we took a train to get there. The ride home, there was a young girl of maybe 7 years old who was there with her family. And she started speaking with us. And then as we got off the train at our stop, her father said, oh, she was so excited to meet and practice her English with Americans. So, you know, it's experiences and connections like that I think are really what make small town travel so exceptional. You just can't replicate that in a big city.
Yeah. You know, I think that that's an amazing story, and it makes so much sense. That happens often in small towns where you're able to talk to somebody and everybody knows everyone, and, you know, you're able to get the things that you need. In your situation, it's not, you know, that's even more amazing because you didn't know the language. I'm assuming you didn't know the language.
No, we do not know German.
And there's still, you know, people that are willing to help you. And, you know, it's just, I like having that confidence when traveling to small towns. You know, yeah, there may be a little bit more legwork sometimes. That's where I was going.
Okay. Yeah.
Now I figured it out. There may be a little more legwork that you have to do as far as maybe, you know, calling a place ahead of time, making arrangements to go somewhere, you know, those sorts of things. Like, small towns do keep different hours, but that's because they're small.
Most definitely.
You know, I mean, some people get agitated by that, but you don't need to anymore because we have so many tools, and a lot of these small towns have started to take advantage of the internet age. You know, so you can get a hold of people in so many different ways, and they would be happy to accommodate you. You know, I mean, there's just, that's something that I tell people all the time, you know, oh, well, we're going there, but this was closed and this was closed. It's like, take the time before you go to a small town. If there are places that you're interested in, give them a call, shoot them an email, see if they'd be willing to open for you. You'd be so surprised. You'd be surprised how many people want to meet you and, you know, to let you experience whatever it is that they have. You know, you don't always have to adhere to specific hours listed in a small town. Like, there may be opportunities to still accommodate you. So that's something that I love.
Yeah, that's such a great observation. I absolutely love that, because you're right. There can be a little bit more effort on your part you know, upfront in the planning stages. But I agree that if you do put in that little bit of effort, people in small towns, as a broad generalization, you know, I'm sure this isn't true everywhere, but they will, you know, make a lot of effort to roll out the red carpet for you. And they're usually, you know, excited that you're taking the time to plan to come and see them. So yeah, that's a great observation.
So once again, switching gears just a little bit, because I like to throw this into the show for some of the people that listen, because they want to get into the travel space somehow. So as a woman entrepreneur who's doing well and is obviously a natty dresser, seriously, though, I just think it's amazing what you do. And, you know, being a woman entrepreneur and traveler, is there any advice that you would give to any of our listeners that want to try to get into, you know, some sort of giving advice on a blog, or if they're just looking to get into doing more travel, or just from Natty Gal in general, the advice you'd like to give?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Let me think here for a second. You know, from the wanting to get into either a travel business or content creation or blogging, I think that first I would, you know, encourage your listeners just to be really sure that whatever niche they're looking into is a true passion for them. As you're well aware, you know, the early days of any kind of business can be very, very challenging. And if you don't truly love what you're doing, I think it can be like a pretty quick path to getting discouraged. So, you know, that being said, once you get underway, I would just say be patient and keep your forward momentum going. My husband and I both like to subscribe to what we call a no zero days philosophy. And what that basically says is just don't go to bed until you've taken at least one little step towards one of your bigger goals. And we use this both for personal, you know, personal goals, like read a little bit each night, or, you know, practice, I don't know, whatever, like I take Spanish classes, it could be practicing my Spanish. For an entrepreneur, this could be, you know, making a cold call or pitching to an investor. For a content creator, it might be writing a blog post or creating a new video. But just whatever you do, don't let yourself have any 0 days. You know, do something, no matter how small. And then I think the last thing that's so important, and part of the reason why I'm here on your wonderful show today, is just to get out and network as much as you can. Oh, don't be afraid to reach out to people, meet people, attend some conferences in your field, and just keep building your network, because you can get some help from some surprising sources, and often when you least expect it.
I think that's amazing advice. I love the no 0 days philosophy. I think for me internally, especially, you know, again, like I'm just bringing it back to having children, because that's where the space I'm in right now. And when you're in that transitional phase, you have days where you want to do nothing, and you have days where you're like, that sounds amazing, is to do nothing, except that I run a business.
Right.
I run a business and I'm invested in my, you know, my personal goals as well. So, you know, internally thinking, okay, I just have to do at least one small thing, that would be good. But I love elevating that to the no 0 days philosophy. I think that's so smart. And, you know, because it's not a huge commitment. I mean, it's something that anybody can do. And I just think that's a really great way to get to any goal, you know, because life is so overwhelming. And in this space, especially with content creation and travel, and it can be overwhelming. There's, you know, days worth of content that I'm going through right now, and you wonder what you're going to say because you have so much content. It's just, you're like, you know, can I just give up right now? I need to take the day off because this is like super overwhelming.
Overwhelm can be so real. And I think especially, you know, I have so much empathy for where you're at, because we're in two very different, you know, phases of life right now. You've got a toddler at home, you've got kids you're taking care of, you know, you're doing all of this with all those additional commitments and responsibilities. I'm doing this, you know, as a childless, you know, married person who has a supportive spouse. And, you know, I've got a couple of those things going. But, you know, for all of us, I think the overwhelm can be very, very real. You know, doing something little, my little might be a little bit more intensive than what your little is, just because of our two different time constraints. But I think for anyone, if you just take one little step, whatever little means to you, you know, that you'll keep that forward momentum going, which is so important.
Such good advice. And it just kind of really, the way that you're talking about it, it really just ties into, you know, your philosophy. And I really, really love it. And the other part about getting out there and meeting people and things, I think we all, no matter what, you know, part of life you're in, I think we all kind of fall victim to that a little bit. I mean, I'm not a shy person, but I like my personal time. I like my personal space, all those kinds of things. And lots of things that I could partake in that I might pass over for one reason or another. But anytime that I don't pass over something that could be important for my business, even if part of me is going, is it really worthwhile? It always ends up being worthwhile. Every single time. There's always something that happens, you know, whether, like you said, it's attending a conference or some kind of networking group or whatever it is. Even if I don't think it's worth my time, it always ends up being worth my time. And I don't really have a good way to explain that, but that's what happens.
Well, I completely agree. And I totally relate. Believe me, I am, you know, massive introvert. So I get where you're coming from, where, you know, you can feel a little hesitant. It can be hard to put yourself into situations where you don't know anyone, you're in unfamiliar places. But you when you do take those chances, I think more times than not, you're rewarded for it. So
absolutely. Well, Betsy, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today. And I just love your philosophy on life. And I hope that more people will go and check out Natty Gal and, you know, be able to get advice from you like I did today. Where can people go to find you?
Oh, well, first of all, Christy, I just want to say this has been so much fun. I have had an absolute blast talking to you. So thank you again for the opportunity to come in
and
share what I'm passionate about with your listeners. And from you, I look forward to hearing about your new small town discoveries this fall. I'm always on the lookout for your new social media posts and blog posts. As for how to reach me, you know, I love it when people reach out and I love helping others with their trip and wardrobe planning. Probably the easiest way to reach me is through the contact tab under about on my website, which is nattygal.com. That's nattygal.com. And then on social media, this is where things get a little confusing. My handle is nattygal.com, but Natty Gal was taken. So you have to spell all those words out. It's NattyGaldotCom. And that's on all social media platforms.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Betsy. I really appreciate you again. And, you know, you just made my whole day. So I feel so much better just from talking to you. So I
think. Oh, thank you. I feel likewise. I had so much fun. Yeah, this has been a great time. Thank you so much, Christy.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. For more information on the towns we visit, go to travelsmalltowns.com. And to be a guest on the show or to sponsor an episode, navigate to our podcast page. Here you can see more information on guests, listen to more episodes, and submit guest requests. It all starts at travelsmalltowns.com.